actually in open session.
Well, I think they called you in.
Please.
Wow, that's
Bryce.
A first.
Frank, would you lead us in the...
Roll call, please.
Karen Armstrong. Guy Falcon.
Here.
Kathleen Greenberg Junez.
Here.
Frank Hay.
Here.
Leonard King.
Here.
Stan Karofsky.
Here.
Richard Levine.
Here.
George Palmer. Steve Trombley.
Here.
Nathan Bull.
Here.
We do have a quorum. We will continue. And I want to point out, board members, since you have a new agenda in front of you, it's only got a few things that have changed. So that I can point those out to you before we vote on approval. We did have a person that we were moving forward in position that is not on here tonight because of a change. And of course, the checks signature that went along with that has also been removed. We added the sports piece since we were making some changes. We felt we might as well put these in so that they can get moving on the season.
What? Excuse me, what person is removed? I can't cross-check that quickly. Okay.
Okay. And the superintendent will address that. And also a motion for the Clinton County Industrial Development Agency. A motion for that continued piece, which came forward. We should move on that tonight to keep this process going. It's necessary. So that'll be at the end E of financial. Any questions? So I'll ask for the approval of the agenda.
Motion.
Second. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Leonard. Questions? Comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. I'll open the floor for public comment for 5 minutes. Anybody would like to make a statement to the board? Okay. I'll move on to the next piece. I'm making a small little change in Mr. Bull has some pressing matters that he needs to get to tonight. He asked to have his presentation moved up, so I'm willing to do that if the board's okay with that, to allow him to move out.
Sorry.
Okay, just a couple of things to know on tonight. It's pretty weird to think that we're already in second half of the year. Students are actually planning their schedules out for the upcoming year already. They're meeting with their guidance counselors. Every day they have full schedules now, making plans for next year. And students get to choose their own classes. Of course, they fill the spots of the required ones first, but then they get to choose their electives. Also, all of the winter sports finished last week. All of our teams did great. Our wrestling team was Section 7 champions, and volleyball and bowling and basketball also had great seasons. Spring athletics are starting next week. And some upcoming events to be aware of are the Pops concert. It's next Tuesday night, March 17th at 7 o'clock, and that's featuring the band, chorus, jazz band, and a cappella group. And also the FSO is sponsoring a lip sync contest on April 3rd. And that's just about it.
Any comments or questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just about it. Okay. Next presentation, I think, if I may ask for Chef to make the introduction.
We could ask everyone to please join us over here. We're going to have a demonstration of our Center for Diversity and Inclusion program.
Just in case you can tell us what
you
do. You too, Chef.
Nice collage. Nice collage. Nathan, did you guys?
Yes,
I want to see if I can't get some more pictures tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have individual ones.
Well, we are on the verge of launching our first film and wrap session next Wednesday, March 18th, in our auditorium. We did a joint session with the Crew High School at Plattsburgh State earlier in the fall. Mr. Ravager's class and I went and participated in the film and literature class at Plattsburgh State last Wednesday or Thursday?
Last
Thursday. And that went very, very well. And we're really pleased to be here tonight to share with you in greater detail what a Center for Diversity, Pluralism, and Inclusion really truly means to us as a high school and to our community. So I'm going to introduce Adam Ravager, who is teaching our class presently, and he's going to introduce the folks from Plattsburgh State panel.
Okay, thank you. Right here we have Kevin Pearson. He is the outreach coordinator at Plattsburgh, and he has been here for at least 3, if not 4 days a week, working with me with the technology piece, with the readings, facilitating discussion within the school. So he's really gotten this thing off the ground in conjunction with me in the classroom. Over here we have Deb Light. I am Your Highness J.W. Wiley, who teaches this course at the college level, and I took this course in the fall. In preparation to be teaching in the spring, it's examining diversity through film. So, I'll turn it over to you guys.
Hello, everyone. Good. How's the energy tonight?
Low. Very low.
We're going to get you up a little bit. Okay, so we're going to start, as we like to do many of our classes, with a film clip. It's 6 minutes long, and we are looking for about 8 to 10 minutes of discussion on your thoughts from this clip. This is symbolic of how we teach our class and where we go. The only thing you're missing is we didn't give you any assigned readings prior to this, which I'm sure you appreciate. Okay, so this is a clip from an episode of Seinfeld. And the typical episode of Seinfeld is 22 minutes long. We cut this to 6 minutes.
China is an instant page turner.
What's that? It's a wizard, electronic organizer for my dad. He's going to Florida for his birthday.
How much was it?
200, but I'll tell him it's 50. He doesn't care about the gift, he gets excited about the deal.
You're getting a wizard for $50.
Yeah, tell him I got it on the street, maybe it's hot. That's his favorite.
I got a message from the Rosses at work today.
Susan's parents? When's the last time you talked with them?
At the funeral, give it a thing. You know, deep down, I always kind of felt that they blamed me for Susan's death.
Why? Because you picked out the poison envelopes?
That's silly.
Oh, Daryl, these are people I know. Jerry, George.
Nice meeting you. I gotta run, Elaine. I'll see you later.
Thanks.
Still no
putty? I think his answer machine's broken, so I just gave up. What do you think?
What about you dating a black guy? What's the big deal?
A black guy?
Terrible. He's black, isn't he?
He is?
No, he isn't.
Isn't he Irish?
You think?
I thought he looked Irish.
What's his last name?
Nelson.
That's not Irish.
I think he's black.
Are you talking about this?
I think it's okay.
No, it isn't.
Why not?
Well, it would be okay if Daryl was here.
If he's black.
Is he black?
Does it matter?
No, of course not. I mean, I'd just like to know.
So you need to know?
No, I don't need to know. I just think it would be nice if I knew. Should I take that?
One second.
Oh, here.
Yeah.
So, This is our icebreaker. We want to engage that. Just have your thoughts. What do you think is taking place in that 6 minutes that you just watched? What's happened?
People are assuming too much. They don't know the facts. They just assume that one is one and the other is the other.
Okay. She's trying to find out how she feels about her dependent on this race.
Okay. Anyone else?
It shows how uncomfortable people are talking about.
Okay. Anyone else? Any other thoughts? That is the primary reason why we show this clip at the beginning of our semester and our methodology piece with our students. Because people are uncomfortable talking about race and a lot of the other things that we're trying to bring to your campus. Which is the essence of what this presentation is about, the essence of what the initiative is about, the essence of what we do. We try to create conversations that are very uncomfortable for most of us because of the fact that we haven't been in those conversations. Because we believe that conversation is the key. The more comfortable you are communicating with someone, the more those walls, those differences come down, and we start to make connections that we probably wouldn't make because we find the ways to talk to one another. To get past the differences that have been socially constructed to keep us apart from each other. So you just got a glimpse of what we do at SUNY Clarksburg and what we, one of the facets of what we want to do at Beacontown and what we've been fortunate enough to start this year. So we'll take you into the presentation. So you've been introduced to us, Deb, Kevin, me, J-Dub, not your highness, as Adam tried to clown me with. Okay. It gets us in the mood. Two, normally these words are floating around and we often, when we do a presentation, we'll play a little game with the audience. Since we don't have time to play games with you, so you may not be inclined to play games with us. Kip, take those words off. Okay. Want to ask you a question? Just curious. How many of you think you can name all six of those things that were just up there? Other than Adam, who's taking the class.
Ability. Ability, race, orientation. Ability, race, orientation.
What orientation?
Sexual orientation.
Sexual orientation.
Gender.
Gender.
Privilege.
Privilege, that's spot.
Class.
How many times you got to tell them, right? Okay. We put that up because it's symbolic of the fact that we cover a lot of territory with the diversity initiative. It's not one dimensional. Okay, a lot of diversity offices across the country are one dimensional. They say they're talking about diversity, but what they're really talking about is probably race and maybe they'll throw in gender or sexual orientation. We cover a lot of territory. We have six words up there, privilege being the one theme we don't cover. We'll get into that a little bit more. But we could have also had ageism. We could have had religion. We could have gone a lot of places. And in general, we go all those places because they come up in the conversation. They come up in the film clips and in the reading. So, that's just to show off a little bit.
Okay, so we want to give you some background on how we articulate diversity on our campus as the place where your program is kind of flowing from. So diversity at SUNY Plattsburgh is not articulated from the margins, but is featured prominently as one of the core values of the institution. We commit to a diversity plan that includes the following elements. programming for diversity and inclusion, faculty development and comprehensive curriculum inclusion, recruitment and retention of a diverse faculty and staff, recruitment and retention of a diverse student body, services to students and staff with disabilities, student organizations actively engaged in multiculturalism and social justice, reduction of violence against women and people of color on campus, and investigation of any act of discrimination. So these are the things that we encompass. CDPI is responsible for kind of spearheading a lot of the initiative, but there are a lot of other players. And if there weren't a lot of other players, it simply wouldn't be an effective, it wouldn't be campus-wide, it wouldn't be an effective initiative that covers the entire community. So again, out of this program, the idea was...
Yeah, so the idea really is to take what we've done at what JW and the Center, and the Center for Diversity has done and bring that Beekman Town use it as a model for what is possible. And so all of these things may not take off at first, but once we get the groundwork, you know, there's a lot of possibility for where it can go, and this is just some of the possibility.
And let me interject. Let's, you know, loosen up here and have a little bit of fun here. This guy here was a student of ours about 4 or 5 semesters ago, a young man from Long Island. We didn't know him from Adam. And he took the class and floated the first 4 or 5 weeks in the class. Really wasn't in the game. And then all of a sudden the light came on, he turned it on. And we were fortunate enough to bring him in as our graduate assistant. He did that for 2 years. And this whole initiative is his idea. I stick my chest out and say it's mine when nobody's around. But this is his idea. He came up with it because he thought, you know, what we're doing on our campus is amazing, and Debbie and I and Kevin, we have chances to do these types of things all over the country. We travel a lot doing this kind of work. And Kevin said, we need to do this in our backyard. And we've done a lot of work. Garth has been bringing me out here to do work with the Freshman Academy for years, and Chris Mazzella in Peru, and I've hit most of the schools around here with our assistant, Christy Gagne. So we do a lot of work. But we had not systematically gone after a couple of schools to really make this happen. Kevin came up with the idea, so from this point on, you're about to hear exactly how we implement it on your campus.
So, Beekman Town, HSCDPI, which is High School Center for Diversity, Pluralism, Inclusion Initiative. And really, I mean, I'm 26, but it wasn't so long ago that I was in high school. And so when I went through the course and I TA'd the course, and then I came out as a graduate assistant, and I was working with all these groups on campus, you know, one of the things that I really realized is that growing up in high school, you know, growing up and going to the high school that I went to, but every high school, really there's a limiting factor in development because you're so afraid of, you know, what box you're going to be put in. You know, how are people going to be looking at you? How can you interact with some people, not interact with others? And a lot of that is due to the 5 or 6 themes that we just talked about. And so my thing was that we should really try to get this going earlier. That way people can feel more free to be themselves or more comfortable in their own skin. So some of them, campus-wide administrative to be supported, this is a big piece. I've been having a lot of conversations with faculty on campus, trying to get them to really understand what this is about, because at first it can be a little, people can get taken aback a little. So really, I'm trying to create that support network so that everyone has a better feeling and really wants to get
in. Let me just also add, administratively supported, Ken, as we mentioned about what we do on our campus with some of the other players, Bill Laundry and Brian Hartman, with their organizations collaborating on provosts, we couldn't do it here without Garth and Scott's buy-in from the beginning. Garth has been one of the most amazing colleagues I've had in the North Country, really. So, you know, kudos to Garth's vision as well.
So, CDPI consultants and the Beekman Town Diversity Task Force, these are two major pieces. The Diversity Task Force is really made up of community members, administration, faculty, custodial staff, as well as kitchen staff,
student body. It's really everyone getting together for a meeting that happens about once a month, which will start at the end of this month, will be the first meeting, that allows people to discuss, you know, so what's happening that doesn't really get talked about, that's impacting the students and the students' lives? You know, how do we create a more safe culture for people that don't necessarily fit into rigid boxes?
And let me add this, Kevin. I made this slide and I left something off. This should also say, and advisory council. CDPI has an advisory council. Our advisory council is comprised of Bob Smith, owner of the Ground Round. The superintendent of schools, Michelle Cavanaugh, was on the advisory council. Patty Bentley. We've got some senior members of the community who advise us. We meet with them once a semester or once a year. But they also help us with the vision that we've got, because we basically, all the ideas, like the idea of the class and the idea of the high school CDPI, we ran that through our advisory council first to get their blessing, their endorsement on it. So the thought is that at some point, there'll be an advisory council to this initiative also, perhaps comprised of some of you.
Beacon's out campus squad, diversity and events. So these are just a fraction of things that will be happening on campus within the school. The film series and wrap session, we're going to have the first one next week at 6 or 6:30. We're still trying to figure out exactly the best time. It'll be next week on Wednesday night, and we're going to be showing The Breakfast Club. And so everything is in that film. Hopefully we can get a lot of people together to talk about, you know, so how does this relate to our lives, you know, what's going on here. The faculty panel discussion series. This is where we highlight faculty in the school. You know, a lot of people spend money bringing speakers in when people within the school have expertise that's just amazing and untapped. And so this is where we go to the faculty that have special interests. We bring them in and allow them to talk about what they're really passionate about. And then the students have a discussion based on that, where they can access specific knowledge from people that have spent a lot of time gaining it. The student panel discussion series. This is set up almost the same way as the faculty panel, except it's students that have taken the initiative to really invest themselves into either speaking about their own perspective or speaking about something that they're passionate about. And we gather students, the students together, we sit around as many as we can get, we just have a great conversation. We have one coming up at the end of the month. It's going to be about advertising. I mean, we know that advertising companies target 13 to 18 year olds because they have the most disposable income. So we want the students to be aware that a lot of this is, a lot of this is focused on you. You need to be just cognizant of what they're trying to do to get that money out of your pockets. And then what are the larger implications of that? Examining diversity through film course. And we have another slide that gets back to that, so we'll go through that in a minute. Oh, also the faculty roundtable discussion workshops. This is a faculty development piece. It's about curriculum inclusion. Making sure that those themes start to show up across the board in math and science, that instead of one way of looking at things, that there are a lot of ways, and we can include everybody. You know, everyone's voice can be seen in all the subjects.
Let me just add one other thing. These three items, the rap session, discussion series, this class, and this are all part packaged in our curriculum inclusion initiative on our campus. Okay, and the diversity through film class actually is a professional development opportunity for faculty. We've had over about 30 faculty rotate through our class. Okay, you can rotate through any of the two themes. So at some point, that may be something else you want to do here as well. But there's a lot of benefits to that.
We actually have had faculty come and sit on a couple of classes. So again, this is the film series, the rap session. I will do that in a minute. The first one is Breakfast Club. I think we'll be doing What's Eating Gilbert Grape and possibly Finding Forrester, or we'll be doing three a semester. It'll happen March, April, May, and then three more in the fall, and so on. These are some of the topics that we've done on SUNY Plattsburgh campus in connection to the faculty panel discussion. We could definitely go to some of these places, but we'll probably be focusing more towards issues that really directly affect, you know, 14 to 18 year olds and, you know, what they experience. These are some of the student panel discussions. We just started the student panel discussions about 2 years ago. These are three of the topics that we've done so far. One on dysfunctional language and sort of, you know, how what you say affects whether or not it affects you, it affects other people that are around you. And so that's at the heart of that one. World's Going Wild, that was about body image and how mass media sells body image, especially to young people, and the impacts that has. And American Idol was about reality television, which has been, you know, extremely popular the last couple of years, and can have some, definitely some negative effects on children coming up. These are some of the...
That's fast.
Yeah.
These are some of the topics that we've done for faculty roundtable discussions. We have one of those coming up. We have the introductory one coming up at the end of the month also. So, and really this is about, I said a little bit before, but that's really about making sure that everyone's voice is represented in the school. And so, and do you want to join me for a minute?
Sure.
Talk about this.
This particular book right here is where we pull a lot of our readings that the kids do before we look at clips. Oftentimes, either in conjunction with looking at clips or prior to looking at them. These readings can be upper level. It's definitely challenging readings, but they're short. And we've got a group that's really embraced these readings and has done quite well with them. We've looked at ability, we just finished ability, and we're just starting the theme of race. And we've done the methodology piece, which is kind of the introduction to everything.
So, this is a course that Deb, JW, and myself teach at the SUNY Plattsburgh campus. I reconfigured it with the help of Adam to more suit the age group that we're talking to. So some of the readings remain, we brought some new readings in, some of the film clips remain, we brought some new film clips in. And really, it's about immersing them in a conversation with different perspectives that they haven't had before. You know, we had a break, they wrote their first papers on ability and disability the other day, and we had a breakout group, which is what we do after they bring their paper in, we sit down and just talk about, so what you decide to include, what was the thesis of your paper, and then afterwards ask them, so let's get some feedback about how this is going. Is there anything that you would do differently or would want to see done differently? And, you know, this is indicative of how the classes responded, and they said the only thing we would want is maybe to make it a double period or to make it a year-long course because there's just not enough time to get inside of all these little things that we've been thinking about.
Which, as a high school teacher, is the best thing you can hear. They want to be there longer, which you don't hear very often, so this is a good thing.
Anything else you want to add? So this is the way the class runs. There's copies of the syllabus that you can all pick up at some point, probably later on afterwards. So you can get take a look at the syllabus. This is really how it runs. We do a methodology piece up front so they can sort of get the grounding for what's going to be happening later on.
And the clip you just saw is part of our methodology.
It's part of the methodology to create that conversation. The five diversity themes that we looked at earlier, all done in a two-week rotation with a paper due at the end of every 2 weeks. The integration of the themes and privilege, how privilege works inside of those, and then they have final presentations where they work as a group to unpack their own films, find their own articles, and present to the class. No? So these are some of the dichotomies that we look at. And try to unpack together. You know, so what does it mean? You know, what does it mean to someone who's of a higher socioeconomic class? What does it mean to someone that's part of a lower socioeconomic class? And where are the misunderstandings that exist between those two? These are just some of the places that we end up going through all the conversations that are happening in the program.
And I'll add, often people want to take the word diversity as
almost as it's profane and not want to embrace it because they don't see themselves as part of our diverse conversation, our universe. This is just evidence how you see yourself represented up here over and over again. This conversation is a reflection of every one of our realities. It's a conversation that we need to have. And the other thing is, we were fortunate at the same time this young man was taking the course, we had two women from NUCA taking the course. So at the same time, you're on the cutting edge with Adam and Kevin teaching and Peru doing its thing, this class is also being taught in NUCA. This is something we hope that you're all celebrating. You should be proud of yourselves because we couldn't have done this without you and Peru taking the initiative to allow us to be a part of what you're trying to do for your students. And this is something that we are very, very invested in and very proud to be a part of.
And the other thing I would follow that up with is that this is extremely community-based. And without the administration support, without the faculty support, without the community support, it's not going to have the same power that it can have if a lot of people decide to get behind this and really talk about it. Like JW said, this is not a program about race and racism. This is a program, these are programs that address everybody in this room, everybody in this school, everyone is affected by one of these levels of privilege or oppression. And so,
this is, we close out our presentations a lot of different ways, but since this is an educational facility, educational institution, we want to close it out with this, just give you something to think about. This is a old school classic song that you're about to hear that many of you may be familiar with. It's okay if you tap the foot and get that head bumping a little bit, but we want to end with this. The first verse, you won't see the lyrics to. The second verse you will. Intimidated by middle school and younger kids. Okay, so we were happy that we got a lot of calls from the high school level. There's no doubt, that's a great point. This could be done at the middle school as well. But you've heard the saying, you got to crawl before you can walk. We're crawling now, going to the high school, just trying to figure out how this plays out. Because the things we do are for adults, and we don't have to edit anything. So these two have taken on a major task, taking what we do at the college level and transitioning it to that level. So, you know, 3 years from now, Tech will come with another idea, we'll be in the middle school.
And I think that was really one of the large points, that's eventually how we hope that it will work, is that we knew how to translate our material as best we could for the high school age, and that hopefully that once it started working its way in and becoming normalized within the school, that middle school teachers would be coming for resource material, and that elementary school teachers would be coming for resource material, and that eventually this would be something that's starting ground up instead of, you know, just getting them before they go out.
Yeah. Can I just jump in for a quick second? The Thursday, the 27th, is a professional development day, K-12. And this group's faculty roundtable workshop is an option for any of the teachers in our district to be choosing to be a part of, so they can begin to understand this initiative, the center, and start the dialogue in their buildings as to how it might translate into their buildings, most certainly. So even though formally it's in the high school at this point in time, the professional development opportunity is K-12 on Friday the 27th of March for everyone in our school district to be getting an ear of what we're trying to do.
I think it's important to point out that this is a generational issue also. So I can remember when I was in high school and you would go to a class such as this, and you knew when you sat down in the class and they started talking that your parents didn't believe it. You know, and then you had to walk a tightrope that at school you acted one way, but at home you acted a different way. Because you couldn't contradict your father, you know. And you see, as you sit down, as people get older, in each generation they have completely different ideas, and it's because, and I also believe that it getting to the younger kids early is better, because by the time you get to high school, a lot of that's hard to remove if someone's prejudiced or something. It's hard to get that out now because they've lived it. So I applaud the fact that you're going to try to get down to a younger age, because once someone gets an idea, just like religion, if you're brought up Catholic, you're Catholic. You know, and it's hard to change that.
You know, the other thing
I just, it's a really good point, and it's still very much the case. You know, our college students discuss this also with, you know, not just parents, other family members, friends even. I think the important thing to understand about this work is that it's not about any of us educators, you know, trying to tell students how it is or how it should be, or, you know, what the truth is. It's not any of that. It's about really looking at, you know, how our society is constructed so we understand each other. So if we have, you know, if your high school students who are, you know, coming young adults start thinking for themselves, that's not a bad thing. But they're not needing to be in opposition to anyone, because we frame it as, look, we all are growing up in the same system, and we all, you know, share the work of trying to understand each other. So it's not a matter of right or wrong, which, you know, it's just an oppositional thing.
And the only thing I was going to put out there is that, you know, the Freshman Academy that you know, Garth has up and running, and the other programs that are here for the students at Beavertown has helped to create a great response between the students to this program coming in. And so about reaching younger students so that their ideas are informed, that is definitely the case. But Beavertown has already created a great atmosphere that makes the students feel really comfortable about being able to talk openly about issues that normally are taboo or sort of kept, you know, like George, you know, are we supposed to be talking about this? You know, there's already something going on here that this just adds another amazing layer to.
I guess my point is probably with the parents, because we're the ones that teach our kids before they come into school, during school, and even after school. And I didn't see anything addressed us as far as how we're going to be included in all this process.
The film and rap sessions that are after school, those will be put out to the community and the parents to come with the students to be part of that conversation. And you know, that was one of the pieces that we were trying to adapt and still in the process, because that's not something we engage at the college campus. So we've talked about creating a couple of new programs for the high school also that are really family oriented and based, whether it's a different type of talk. You know, we're still in sort of the formative stage, a different type of talk that happens that students would bring their parents to, that would do workshops or
we can go a lot of places with this. You know, we've done work with the New York State Nursing Association in New York City, where we go for 6 hours and do a weekend where we have 30 top level people from different hospitals around New York City who are all coming residents for 6 hours, and we immerse them in a slice of the class. We can easily slice the class out and immerse you in it. So it's a great question. We can do it through a diversity and likeness session. We could do it through a slice of the class, film series and raps. Our film series on campus is open to the public. You can always join us there for that conversation. But if you want something more structured, all you have to do is have the conversation. We'll find a way to do it. Peru, during the summer, for the last 3 summers, we've spent time with Peru's faculty. The first summer, I talked to A. Paul Scott, and we designed a unit where they could have a 4-hour block of our examining diversity through film class. And they loved it so much, they brought us back the second summer. And we took those 30 people, 30 faculty who were in that section, and put them in a second section and repeated the first one for 30 more faculty to come in. This summer, we're going back again for the third time and adding a third dimension to it. The only thing that's stopping us from doing the same thing for your faculty or you as parents is you talking to us about it.
And that's really where the Diversity Task Force and the Advisory Council come in, because the Diversity Task Force, which will have parents, I'm hoping that there will be some that want to be involved, as you know, and community members, that will give us insight or their perspective about what the students need us to help provide for them in the school. And then the parents or community members that are part of the Advisory Council can help give us feedback about the initiative as a whole and what, you know, what movements need to be made in different directions. So hopefully that those voices will be prominent and we can definitely try to include and work towards that direction. Did we help you? Did that answer?
Yes, sir. A lot of people think that we've gone a long way. I'm struck that, you know, I go to movies a lot, and recently how popular the Gran Torino was and the demographic there. And all you had to do was go there to know we had a long way to go.
Yeah, I'm smiling because I have a blog on the Christian Republican website, and just about 3 weeks ago, I had a conversation on the blog about Gran Torino. So I wasn't sure if you were about to, you know, come at me from that. Okay.
No, that's that. You know, I watched it, you know, and understood, and I said, anybody said, was it good? Don't send any kids. You can't let a kid go to that. You know, it's just automatically, he said, it's not appropriate. You know, that's the generation part of it. That there weren't no young kids. There weren't any young kids there. It was all a certain age group, you know, a certain age and up. And it just shows we still have a long way to go.
Yeah, we have a long way. I'll just leave it there. I won't discuss Gran Torino. We're wrapping.
If you cover that, I'll go to class.
Any other questions?
Well, I'd like to thank the folks from Plattsburgh State for coming out this evening and spending the evening with us. Also, thank you for the great work that Kevin's doing with them. I enjoy visiting with them in the hallways and catching up with you almost weekly. Then we get a chance to get caught up and share ideas. And it is. It is a work in progress, but there's a vision, and the vision is a shared vision, and the more input that we can get and the more participation that we can get to include all components of our community is greatly appreciated. So thank you very much.
The last piece that I would add is that I'm in the school Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at least, for half, if not more, the day, and then Tuesdays and Thursdays sometimes. So if anyone, you know, wants to stop by, if you're here working or in Adam's room.
I'm here every day. Catch up to me. I have a copy of, I think, 25 copies, and I hope that's enough to go around. Of the syllabus, if you want to pick it up, I can just leave it right over here. It's a syllabus that we're using for the high school version, so you can see what we're covering.
Hey, did you see Gran Torino? They used every name for any nationality there was in the world. What? Our meeting's in there.
Budget presentation's in there.
Oh, I'm taking a break.
So there isn't a tremendous amount of change from that work session to tonight.
but not everybody was at the first session, and certainly the board members still need to see what, if anything, has changed since then. And oh boy, the word change in Albany, if you put those two words together, you can realize how much is occurring at the state level. There's been all kinds of press information that I'm sure you have read with interest regarding the governor's budget proposals to affect schools in New York State. At the same time, you were aware of the drama unfolding, as I was, with what was going to happen with the federal stimulus money that finally was approved. That has an impact on our budgets as well. So those two new pieces are factored into how I'm choosing to present the information to you tonight. And I hope it's not confusing, because some of the details will still be worked out, but we have a better sense of direction tonight than we did literally 4 days ago. So here we go. There are a number of budget assumptions that are used when we shape any budget, any school budget in particular, and these are the items that are built on the revenue side as we proceed through the documents this evening. We make assumptions on the revenue property tax assessments, only we built this budget around the assumption that we don't know that there will be any, for the obvious reasons of the economic times, but also guessing at a number is truly a guess until it's the assessor gives us that data, which comes very, very late in the budget process. It just doesn't make prudent sense to put numbers up there that we either have to apologize for lost revenue later or seem to be deceiving of anybody that there was a different number higher than the one we projected. So we built this budget on the assumption there are no percent increases in property tax assessments. That's a given as we build this. We do know that there is a negative amount in state aid. Literally 1.58% decrease in state aid, which was based on the governor's original proposal. As the board members will know, what I presented last time, the state deficit reduction assessment was a one-time, or at least this year, a first-time reduction that the governor was applying to school district budgets. It's factored on a formula. Our share of that formula was in excess of $800,000 of lost aid. That was his original budget proposal. That was before the federal stimulus bill was enacted at the federal level. So we built this budget, however, on the assumption that we were not going to see that money. So we're at the revenue source. We started with an understanding we're in a decrease of 1.58% in state aid. Operating on that principle. When I say we, I'm talking about the administrators and supervisors and all the department individuals who are associated with the budgets that eventually come to the community for a vote. We know, we estimated a loss of $200,000 in lost interest income. That's because the market did what it did, and some of our dollars are tied to the market. And if the market goes down and doesn't give us interest-bearing income, we can't count on it anymore. So we subtracted out of the budget process $200,000 lost interest income. Some good news is that we can count as revenue approximately $240,000 in new pilot revenue. The Saranac Power pilot agreement that kept the board informed of through the last year is closing in on its signature date of approval by all the entities. When that happens, our district is expected to receive two pilot payments, divided 240 into the and by two, and it's approximately $170,000 a payment. That's estimated new revenue because, quite frankly, we operated last year on the assumption that the money was all gone unless a new agreement was generated. This year, we can say it's here, and we're counting on that revenue. $1.5 million applied to the fund balance. Each year, the district, and the board, rather, makes a decision regarding fund balance to apply to offset costs for operating a school district. We again operated on the same amount this year as we have applied in the previous 2 years, $1.5 million. And $200,000 in capital debt reserve applied against debt payment. We have debts, and there is a capital reserve account, and we place $200,000 to start to pay off that capital debt. So these are the revenue assumptions that the budget is built on.
Questions?
Yep.
Before you leave.
Yep.
On the pilot program, we were going to do 170 over 2 years, or it was going to be 240 one shot payment?
No, the payment schedule is divided over two. How do I describe it? The payment schedule is 170 is the amount that comes in one payment. But the applying it to a budget, the cycle of when that is applied to our school budget is after the public votes on the budget. In other words, there's revenue coming in that we're counting on as half of the piece that fits into the budget projection. There's still more coming by the after the budget is adopted.
But it's not two payments for 170. 170 is just the first of the two payments.
170 and 170. Two 170 payments.
That's straightforward.
That's
straight or excuse me.
Yeah, 120. 120.
Yeah.
170.
I probably read it right.
It's 170 and then the second payment is 70.
Yeah.
The second payment is 70. Thank you. Because our expenses, we have increases in salaries across all our cost items. So we factor in an amount to cover those. We know we have a 7% increase in health insurance premiums. We build that into our projection. A 7% contribution rate for TRS, teacher retirement system, which, by the way, is reduced from the 7.63% that it was. So it's down a little bit in that area.
Governor Patterson said that there might be an increase in that TRS.
Over time. That's our. We're operating in the hard. The contribution level we are operating from is almost 7%. But it's to be on alert that that level may not be able to be held in future years, and that area probably would be increased, or the contribution from the employer would increase. There's 11.51% contribution rate for ERS, employee retirement system, and it's the same estimate that we based our last year's budget on. So we didn't change the percentage there. There is a 4% estimated increase in merit charges and OSIS charges. OSIS and merit are services we purchased and necessarily so to provide programs for which we do not have physical space and accommodations to provide ourselves. Their overall increases, we're estimating to be approximately 4%. Now this was all the development and potential increase in special education personnel for two reasons. It says potential. One is it's just that, it's potential. Secondly, when I get to the slide to point out, what I want to point out when I get to that slide is that the possibility, it's not in this budget, but the possibility exists to save, have more cost savings to the district instead of sending money to BOCES and buying a service at a much higher charge. The district could afford to have that same service made available in-house, but it would need to hire personnel to do it. So the critical issue becomes, do we add personnel to save money in doing so, or not add personnel and contribute a higher rate to BOCES to get the same service? But I bring that point in not because the budget includes this. You'll see later that it's not based on this. We did not build in the budget the increase. It's just to hang out there and let everyone know there's a possibility to find some more if that was the wishes of the district board to do so. Out of the district, we have some demographic data. These are real numbers for this current year. We're looking at 2,034 students, placing us second highest in the area. You can see the enrollment numbers as you see them there. Some districts. We've lost a few students, but certainly others have as well, and we are second largest district in our immediate coastal city. Okay, here's the nuts and bolts of it all. The state aid proposed by the governor. This chart shows you the current state aid budget, 2008-09, I think was the budget pointer. The center one? The current column, 2008-2009 state aid budget, our projected state aid budget, and the far right is an increase or decrease. Foundation aid was affected by the governor's proposal. Okay, thank you. Okay. Foundation aid is affected by the governor's proposal because the effect was that the foundation aid was frozen, meaning the amount of level that schools could count on for foundation or support aid for students was frozen at earlier amounts. And in addition to that, I'm going to jump out of place for purpose here. In addition to foundation aid being frozen, this is a deficit reduction assessment that was applied to our district. It's in red, in case you can't see it from your seat. And it's to the tune of $832,157. Translation is, that's what we built this budget on. We assumed we were losing that money. And then we went about our business of trying to put a budget together to carry us through the next school year. That number is going to play out in a few minutes in a very different way. The effect of the deficit reduction assessment with increases that were also proposed by the governor through mostly special services, extra costs, public and private building and building reorganization, incentives, transportation, including the summer, there was more money applied to our operating budget in the governor's proposal. The net effect of the pluses and minuses is that we were counting on losing $257,343 in state aid, which amounted to a decrease of 1.58% loss in state aid. We built our budget at this point, assuming that's what it is. Because at that time, if you recall, there was a great deal of mystery coming out of Albany as to whether or not there would ever be a change in the governor's proposed budget. We have a timeline. The board has a timeline to prepare a budget to proposal approval. So we started on these assumptions. I'd like to show you what the state aid will be if the deficit reduction amount is rescinded. And it's important that I tell you that all of the signals that you're following in the newspaper, the stimulus package, carries with it very tight language of what governors must do with the money that came out of that multi-billion dollar package. A significant portion of the money is reserved to states to make an impact on their tax levies and tax rates, actually, for programs and services that are directly involved in K-12 education, as well as higher education. But our purpose is K-12. So the calculated amount of money that would be coming back into the district because of the federal stimulus money is almost exactly the same amount of of the foundation aid that was frozen. So we just made a decision graphically to represent that if it came back again, it's going to be, let's take the state aid reduction amount, change that to zero, because we're getting the money, and let's see what it did to our budget plan. Let's see what it does to it. You'll see that the most important piece to bring that point out is we have moved from, here's our current proposed budget. This is the projected budget for that we believe we need to operate for next year. If we place a zero there, it's not a negative number anymore. And we factor it into the pluses and minuses necessary for the rest of the budget, the overall increase in state aid from the previous slide jumps up to a positive $574,814. Because it jumps to a positive there, it's obviously a positive state aid increase of 3.52%. So now things are getting interesting. We developed this budget around the worst case scenario. But the state aid money, we know, is coming. So it's kind of caught the twist in between how to present where we were, how to present where we're going, and do it with a timeline involved for the audience and the board to kind of get a handle on what's the kind of budget going to look like. That's my challenge to do so. Budget to budget. This page represents what, as a district, I believe in supporting the administrators, the supervisors, and in my own perspectives on instructional and support needs for the district. This is the budget breakout that we need to be effective with our program operations and carry on with the business at hand. I will tell you, embedded, there's a lot of numbers up here, but embedded in these numbers are some simple concepts. Number one, we did not add any personnel to this budget. This budget, headcount of staff to staff is identical. The only opportunity to change that will be if, in fact, we incur unknown new costs in special education. Students who bring IEPs that bring with them personnel requirements could affect the number of people that we have in the district next year. But the general approach to this is that we didn't subtract programs or people. You're reading our in neighboring districts, they're not enjoying nearly that same position. There's cuts in programs and cuts in people to come to a level that's workable for their jurisdiction. Couple of things to point out in particular, you'll see some red numbers up here. Substitutes of home teaching pay, it would look like it does represent a decrease of money allotted there. That's a factor not based on our guess, but it's looking at our track record of needing subs this current year and making a determination that we don't need to put as much money for next year in that account. And home teaching pay, the number of students involved in home teaching and the amount of pay associated with home teaching, all of those factors went into saying, you know, we really can do it for a little bit less. And so that reflects a negative decrease, if you will. Over here, maybe perhaps the most, one that might raise some of the greatest immediate issues, building allocations per pupil. This is a negative amount reflected here from budget year to budget year, but it's not a negative amount in terms of real dollars. If you look at what you wouldn't know necessarily unless you compare last year's to this year, we did not have a cost center for curriculum and staff development. And we have split out with our, more appropriately, where to put the monies that were historically reserved at the building level in this category have been shifted to be better reflected in the departments that we have more direct responsibility for them. So on paper, there's a negative number, but the dollars, if you'll see some increases in some of these other support areas, that's because they picked up some of those dollars in their budget, their line item. Fourth thing is all the proverbial bottom line. Everything that I've already explained in the first work session regarding personnel and programs, which literally was no change. The total budget proposed as it sits is $37,161,700. It represents a 2.8% year-to-year spending increase. 2.8. A couple of things I'll point out. If you look up here at employee benefits and salaries, employee benefits rose 5.2% and projected salaries are 3.62%. Even with those two factors together, representing almost 80% of an operating budget, we're presenting a budget tonight that speaks to a 2.8% increase. In part because of the deficit, well, not because, but you'll see how that's affected. I did a little bit ahead of myself. Budget for the government. If the governor's proposed budget became the budget before the federal stimulus package was made available, our numbers would look like this. Our non-tax revenue projected from 08 to 09 would increase to the tune of $434,843. That's the loss of the aid. The effect of losing the aid is that the taxpayers would be asked to pick up the pay. The levy would have to increase. The greater percentage would have to come from the taxpayers, rising to 8.69% levy to levy. This is to maintain what I described as our operating budget, what we need to do business, at 2.8%. The effect, if the governor's budget had remained, was we're looking at 2.8% budget, a tax increase would have been necessary to the tune of $1.470. The tax rate would be set at 08-09 to 16.91. And the tax rate on this proposed budget, without the deficit reduction applied, would be $18.38. However, now the deficit reduction gets removed. That's what's coming. That's the state aid that we're expecting. What happens? Changes the picture considerably. Non-tax revenue now is climbing. We have an increase of $397,000 here for state aid. Real property taxes, $614,950. Levy to levy now is shrunk to 3.69 from the other budget. It's still 2.8. This is the spending side. This is just what it takes to do or our projection of what it will take to do business is 2.8% higher dollars than last year. However, because of the change in the age structure that we're expecting, and all the schools are expecting, and the state is expecting, the budget remains the same, 2.8%. The tax rate increase now drops to 0.62 to make that work. The tax rate in 2008-09 was 16.91. The proposed tax rate in 2009-10 becomes 17.53 versus the 18 that we referred to a minute ago. Let's try to look at it in graphic form. The proposed tax rate, as proposed by the governor, flip-flopping back and forth now, you'll see a couple things, I hope. One, that over the past several years, there has been an effort, the board's effort, to continuously bring down the overall tax rate needed voter of the district voters, the taxpayers rather, to support the school budget. And each year that that has occurred, the actual tax rate has even been less. So the blue is what the voters approved in that year. The maroon color is what actually they were charged to pay because of assessments and late other revenue sources that came into the picture. This has been occurring for the last 3 years. This is where we are right now. The voters approved 1743. It actually is operating. We actually are billing at 1691 because it didn't cost it. We didn't need, you know, additional revenue. That's all we needed. The governor's proposed budget would say, if left unchecked, if there was no money coming, new money coming, or return money back from the state, the tax rate would be 1838. In other words, we're starting to see a spike again of raising the requirement for the tax rate. What would happen with the deficit reduction? That tax rate drops from 1838 to the number I already shared with you, 1753. To me, what is significant to point out here is that 1753 and 1742, we are 10 cents apart with another year, $2 million plus of the budget need. We're still that close to what the voters approved last year. And that tax rate has been $1,000 for the last 3 years. What will the actual tax rate be for the voters? In part, it's going to depend on some factors we don't know yet. Some we do, some we don't. Some of it has to do with assessments. If new properties in our school district are assessed, and those assessments are a higher rate, mostly commercial properties would be more suspect for that. We didn't count on those assessment values. Remember, I said it was zero. As soon as that number changes, tax rate can be affected even a little bit lower. The board has... each year, I pointed out in an earlier slide that the board has used fund balance each of the last several years, actually, to help apply it to the budget, the operating budget for the next school year as a way of bringing down the tax rate. It has that opportunity now. I put the circle, as it does every year, I put the red circle here to demonstrate that I really don't know how much lower of 1753 is able to go. That's the piece that's going to unfold over the next couple of weeks. But we are saying, I am saying to you, that the proposed budget right now, with what we know our share of the deficit reduction money being reinstated, brings us to 1753. And room to make it lower with some prudence on how we finish up this school year and money that may or may not be left over. Possible examination of fund balance contribution and higher contribution, and also new revenues that are going to, that we won't know the answer to that until a little bit later in the game, probably closer to April, May. But if history bears out, you can see what's happened in the previous years. So somewhere on that blue line will be the real tax rate for next year. There are three mandated, this is a support slide here for quick, hopefully it's quickly. There are three mandated budget categories used in the school budget. This slide breaks it out to show you how the money is divided up. Section one, I'm up here, administration costs represent 7.44%. Administration are running all of our buildings and all of our central office functions. Section two is 76.22% of the budget. Obviously, the largest amount, because that's the program. That's the business we're in, education and providing services to kids. The biggest chunk of the budget comes out of that area, clearly. And section three is capital, infrastructure, light, speed, gas, etc. That represents the other portion of the overall budget. How much of the school budget is paid for by local dollars? Looking back to the first proposal, the governor's budget has remained intact. No federal stimulus money and no changes. It would look like this. Our revenues necessary to support our school district would be from other revenue sources, approximately 51% of the operating budget of $37 million. Real property taxpayers or taxes would be 49%. Okay, so taxpayers came in, would be supporting this budget for the 249% of its cost. Now we go to what about the deficit reduction? Money coming back in that we know we're getting. What happens to the pie chart? Now we can see that it makes an immediate change. The greatest number of revenue, including the deficit reduction money, now bumps up the contribution from other revenue sources to 54%. And conversely, it decreases the amount of real property taxes that they would be being gathered from taxpayers, 46% level of support. So change the distribution quickly. Cost center allocations, this is a graphic just to show you how the pie is divided up into its smaller parts, literally by its function. Salaries and benefits are always, I made a phrase on a statement earlier, about close to 70% of the budget there it is reserved for salaries and benefits of all of the employee groups employed in the district. Building support services, debt service, paying off debt incurred through previous years.
I have a question for that.
Yep.
Is that where the $200,000 goes, the debt service?
Yes. Payment is for the debt service of $200,000, correct, in this proposed budget. Operations of our buildings and grounds represents about 4%, 4.5%, close to 4.5% of the budget. Transportation costs, our busing, et cetera, another 1.5%. Educational technology, all of the technology support pieces, including killing viruses when they attack our system. There's a small joke there, but that's a lot of work. Is in the educational technology budget. School buildings, money reserved for the school buildings for their operation. Breaking out separately, PE, health, and athletics, supporting all of those programs represents that portion of the budget on an annual basis. And other cost centers and curriculum office work represents the other percent. So it's the same pie, it just breaks out how these pieces are factored into the building.
I have a question.
Yep.
On when you break out those pies, like transportation,
yep,
costs, does that just does that does not include salaries and benefits for the bus drivers, or does it?
Ron, do you factor in there?
All the salary benefits are included in the upper.
In the upper.
So it really doesn't give us a picture, a complete picture of transportation costs.
Of what portion salaries and benefits are applied to transportation?
Right.
It doesn't. This slide doesn't do that. You're right.
And
there are personnel obviously associated with the busing, transportation, but they're accounted for all in the salaries and benefits. I'm just sitting, yeah, checking with my business manager to be sure that's how the configuration is set up.
I didn't know if we would have broken out, including salaries and benefits. Sure.
We have that information broken out. This specific slide does not show that.
Okay. It's in the spreadsheet format. So we have it in spreadsheets. All of that could be printed. The overview. When we move closer to for the board and the public to vote on it. Special education cost containment efforts and opportunities. I singled this one out because they made the statement earlier that we don't have any additional staffing increases. And I have pointed out, however, there may be an opportunity with special education to recognize that it might be wise to do something to save even more. And I'll give you a very brief glimpse of that. The special education cost containment efforts so far. The district has received $269,920 in aid that was not previously collected through Medicaid forms.
Thank you.
That simply means to our special education office, Leanne in particular, our director of special ed, and her staff, chasing down and trying to recover those Medicaid claims that we were entitled to, but for reasons of filing or timeliness in filing, we're not recouped. We're now getting this amount of money because that effort has been intensified, I would say, to say the least, and the effort is bearing out. I'm saying that because that's how much has already been helped toward my ultimate last point here. We've got money coming in that was not there before to the special education office. We also have improved the timely submission and reporting staff claims, which will result in an additional $261,518 of aid. It can either come, I'm not sure if it comes in the form of direct aid or it's applied to the formula that the school district gets, but it's new money. This is a formula based, and it requires the state education department processing claims from each district. And you have to do it in a timely fashion, and you have to do it correctly. If you do both of those things correctly, you get money. we're getting $261,000 more for special ed programs. Not included in this budget, that's a piece I want to keep emphasizing, is the next point. That the district could recognize an additional savings of approximately $77,000 by providing services in the district versus purchasing select services for BOCES. The differential between the cost of planting and sending it to BOCES and keeping it in-house is a plus $76,000. Now, Leanne is working with her staff and the principals on the feasibility of that can be done. I think we've got the space issue worked out, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And we've got the potential staffing piece of it, I think, the people doing it, if you will, understanding that taking the service back has an impact on how they do business with our special needs population. That those conversations have been ongoing. What would it take to pull that off? The district would need to hire a teacher A, and a 0.4 psychologist. The most immediate thing that comes to every time I look at it, I've studied because I keep saying we haven't increased our staffing purposely. This budget of 2.8 is based on that truism. It could change, but in an interesting way, not positive, not up, but even lesser by adding people. The downside to adding people is that you incur costs of people that when the federal stimulus money is gone, you have to make a decision about your staff that's still behind and still needs to be paid. Either we find reductions of these folks at that time, this is a one-year budget, but federal stimulus money is good for 2 years, or somewhere else in the whole operation of special education services, we see reductions of other people. We had students who are being exited, correctly so, this past year. Do you have the number offhand, Dan?
And declassified?
Declassified.
Oh, I think we declassified already.
Okay, so we know that the services provided for the students, when they are appropriately applied, and the student's progress is such that they no longer, quote, require special education services, they become declassified. When they become declassified, the question now becomes if they had aid assigned to them or a teacher, portion of a teacher assigned to them, what happens on the whole genre of all of the needs for the entire population? So that's why it should decrease. In other words, the more kids that get declassified, the less need there should be for staff to support kids who aren't there in the program. But it's not in this budget. It's sitting there as a possibility.
When can we talk about the rationale for the service that you're thinking about maybe providing here in the future? I mean, has that really been scrutinized aside, well, I guess with consideration to other children maybe declassified, but has it really been scrutinized that we even need that service in the first place?
Leanne, I have to catch you with that one a little bit.
The rationale. Not the night. I'm fine with that.
No, I understand. Yes, it has been scrutinized. The proposal, the dialogue, and again, it's not in the budget, that's a good part, but the dialogue around this piece is that could we save more if we took a program into the district? The answer apparently is yes. Do we need that program at all? That comes down to the numbers and the IEPs driving the answer to that question. We know up until this point, we have paid for that service directly to BOCES. Those students have not exited the program at BOCES. It's a question of, do they still need the program? And I think I'm hearing the answer to that has been yes. Is there a cost-effective way to give them that program? That's what this is. That's what this piece would be. But it has, it's ups and downs. I'm trying to be very transparent with it. It's not in this budget. The point is, the 2.8 doesn't include this. And that tax rate doesn't include this. It's not in the budget.
I do have a question for me.
Sure.
Declassification, is that something that normally occurs?
Not all the time, but sometimes yes. When children have disability, it really depends on their disability and their level of involvement. Some children are very involved and they will require special services forever, even into adulthood.
Well, I guess my question would be, is I'm talking from year to year.
Yes, we do. We look at every kid annually, we do revals, And yes, we do declassify some if they can overcompensate and then they can kind of function in general ed. But at the same time, as new kids come in, I have CPC kids, students come in who have special needs. I also have some who aren't making it, and we have to do an initial referral process as well. So it's always like, you know, it's an up and a down. Well, this year we had a huge influx. Remember, I had tons of kids move in. So we're kind of like, you know, price of oil. You never know what we're going to get.
The cost could be the educator.
Yeah.
So we're going to revisit this if it ever, before it like suddenly appears on the agenda. Let's say we decided, okay, or someone's decided, we need this, we've got the money. We'll discuss this again.
Yeah.
Even if it's not approved.
Yeah, in part, that's you know, that's part of what the presentation is about, is to get begin to have feedback on the proposed expenditure of 2.8, on the proposed tax rate, knowing that the only the additions, if you will, to the current staffing is here. This is the piece. It's a question of adding people to pay less for BOCES if the service is still needed. I know I've got the number here, but the cost that we have been paying for BOCES to run the program, as I said earlier, is $76,000 higher than if we do this scenario. That's the point I'm trying to make. But in terms of evaluating that we need the program in the first place, that's what the Special Education Department does annually, high EP by high EP.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get my head around this. Are we talking about here that if a child is declassified, we can't take them back now? We don't have this is just the ones that are still classified that we can pull back.
Basically, what this is, obviously, it's a group of kids who have really some special needs that really we have no place to deal with right now. We're kind of stopgapping them. And when you look at special ed, it's called a continuum of services, all the different things that we either have to offer here or I have to buy. But state law says I must offer that continuum of services. So I have some kids who need a specific place on that continuum. So I either buy it from CVS at so much a child, or I develop our own here, and we are able to do that.
It would obviously be cheaper for us to live. But because we don't have the capacity, then we're paying more.
And the aid that we put on there is a tentative, because I haven't had all our meetings yet, and some of the children I just had a meeting on, he no longer needs the aid. So that's kind of a movement in a good way, although we still need special ed services one. But I don't know yet if we'll need, and so you always look at the most expensive cost to put out there just in case.
But in the future, though, then we'll always have a spot to put this. We can always, I think if a kid qualifies for that area, we can pull them back.
Yeah.
We can't.
What we do with all the special ed teachers this year, they're awesome. And we sat down and we looked at all our kids and what their needs were, and then, you know, on the continuum, and then we decided how we could best group them, and people said, yep, I can do that, and I can use this, so that we didn't have to look out as much.
So basically, the bottom line is we just try not to fall below so many, like with 8 kids that had paid for this, but if we fell down to 2 kids, it wouldn't. So looking forward.
From a utility point of view, in terms of the savings, if you will, and I don't know how you, once you change the rate, once the ratio changes of what it costs to buy it someplace else, lower, then the amount of savings, if you will, by preparing staff to give that service, it costs more. It starts to cost more. That's another reason, but all those reasons, why it's not in this budget.
Makes sense.
Simply an observation as we work in special, as the Special Education Department continues to work, to provide the services for students that are required by law, and predict the services they will need in the future, but determine whether or not the cost that we're paying to deliver that service can it be improved or not. This piece is to suggest, there's at least one program where we think we can improve on it and still save money. But the twist to it, and I try to be, again, as transparent as I could, the twist to it is it represents the only area in the budget that reflects increasing in staff. And I know that can be a sensitive issue for lots of people. The logic behind increasing it is to save some money. Only over a period of a year or two or beyond will it determine, is this still a good move? If it's not a good move, then there wouldn't be in another budget. It's another time.
It seems to be, as long as you're close to breaking even, it's nice to have it there, because you can always save money in the future, where if you don't have it, you can't.
That's the piece for your consideration. And so, believe it or not, that's the overview for tonight.
Yeah.
We will have more shots of this. Community Wellfest.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't see any in the budget, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would like to know how much tax dollar-wise is allocated to support the West Shady School that's no longer in operation.
I'm not going to turn Ron, I don't know. You're probably the best spot of Dan's. Unless Dan is worried, Dan.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know that yet.
Basically, the only dollars that are allocated would be what we spend to keep the building and provide basic services to the building. We do have to keep the building up to date and compliant. But it's not very costly. Probably the most cost is heating the building during the winter time. But other than that, there's no other activity going on in the building. We're not using a lot of electricity. Just mostly maintaining a safe heating temperature.
Yeah, basically. And there is still active monitoring of the lighting. For instance, if no lights are needed, big light saving times, et cetera, there's efforts to monitor how much light is ever needed. You do need to maintain some sense of livability about the building for concerns, vandalism, et cetera, associated with the building. So it's certainly not sitting there without any dollars invested in keeping it there. The exact number, I can certainly get you that. If you need me a name, I can tell you exactly the amount that's been applied one budget year to the next for that building to keep that minimal level of services to it. It's when we say not a lot, obviously that's a relative term, so it really comes down to what's the dollar, and you can judge from that dollar amount. What do you think about it?
Well, I'm asking out of curiosity because I know last year you had spoke that we don't have so much time to leave a building unused before the state claims it.
Yeah.
And are we running out of time with that?
Well, the board has options, and I've kept them informed on the study of the feasibility of using the building in any other capacity. There comes a point where it's a kind of decide what to do with the building, if you will. And the board has done several things. We commissioned, actually, we asked for, and the service was provided, and here's a free promo if I can remember the firm's name, but there's a firm that did this in the district for no charge. They are in the business of analyzing questions like this. What could this building become? How much would it cost if you were to fix it to become this or this or this? So we gave them some options to consider, and they studied the building, and they basically came back and said, well, the cost, the value of the building is one fraction of what it used to be as a building. So to remedy the building or renovate it, if you will, you're going to have to save lots of dollars, hundreds of thousands, to the tune of 150, 200 or more thousand to get it ready to do something with the building. The board's undertaking that kind of work to get it closer to what to do overall with the building structure itself. Could it be leased? Could it be rented? Should it be destroyed? Should it be reconfigured into some other function? Does it become available on the open market for sale or for lease? Those are the issues that the board is struggling with addressing. But the building hasn't been forgotten in that context. Oh, I'm sorry, Richard.
She said about the state taking it. The state will never take it. It's ours. But if you were to sell it, you'd lose state aid. That's a concern. If you sell it, then you lose state aid for like 5 years for the tune you sold it for. So, yeah, it sounds good to get rid of it, but it costs you money to get rid of it.
Right, but it's costing money for the taxpayers. It may not be a lot, but it's costing money to upkeep a building that we're not utilizing.
But the other part of it is, if we do in the future get more kids, if we have that there as an option, that's great. If not, you got to build again. So we're kind of in a no man's land going, what's better to do? Do you want to get rid of it and take away the option of more space and then later on have to build brand new? So it's kind of 50-50 right now. It's hard to decide.
Well, I might not have included that in the most recent discussion we had. I'm glad you brought it up. Is the building discussion slated for part of our budget discussion this year? Like, we're going to talk about it again. I hear what Richard's saying, but I'm not sure that was our consensus.
Okay.
Or or that there weren't other ideas. I know we said we were going to talk about this before we formalize the budget.
Yeah, but our budget doesn't have any portion of that.
Just the maintenance.
Just the maintenance.
Right.
But I would think that at this particular time, every program, like you said, you sat down with special ed, I would say that that would be what I consider intelligent operational business, you know, to every program should be looking and saying, how can we not grow and still serve the needs of our kids if we can help it? Or where is there stuff? I think we have a pretty lean budget, but, you know, I think we need to look at every dollar.
I'm better tracking now your question. There is, I'm still in dialogue with the independent consultant that Rachel that I brought to the board's attention earlier, relative to studying our entire K-5 structure, K-5 elementary. Here are three buildings. It originally started with the dialogue of what to do with West Shade City, and they were going to get involved with that. The cost that I referred to earlier to renovate it, et cetera, shifted the focus of the conversation, at least I asked the consultant, which we've not retained yet. He's just kind of doing the background work to say, if you want me to do it, let me know. When you're ready to go, I will go. I'm back to asking for a quote, is to look at our existing buildings, all of, you know, our K-5 buildings in particular, our two elementary schools, and raise the question, what is possible to forestall or not need, based on enrollment, based on a lot of factors, a way to utilize the buildings to their maximum potential without having to spend more money to do so, even when enrollments increase. So that I haven't brought that back to the board because he literally is building his proposal of the cost to do that work. What I do have from him are all of the guidelines and plans to follow, pretty lengthy and pretty thorough, of what he would do when asked to do the work. And one part of it is basically the quasi-census that we've been all looking for a long time. They don't do, I'm told to the consultant, through state ed recommendation, that they don't do census anymore because it's so cost prohibitive to do census as we remember it to be done perhaps in our days. They work on demographic data. It's all like electronic. Take a peek at your district for the last 10 years. Track what's been going on with your enrollments. Look at live birth rates out of hospitals. Look at trends in the community, new housing, decreased housing. They put all those variables together and come up with a projection over 5 years of what the enrollment would be expected to look like unless there was some major change in those factors. And I don't know what those are. There's just a ton of factors they take into consideration. They can pop out a number saying, count on your population looking like this for the next 5 years. And their projection is they say they can go out as far as 10 years. As one part of the study that they're willing to do for the district, I just asked it as a prudent question, you better give me a quote of what it will cost us to do it, because I'll present that quote to the board and have you here give a quick presentation of what we can do for that quote, and then the decision will be made by the full board to move ahead. But it's all started with the West Shade Z question.
I know there were projections done a few years ago, specifically in relation to the new development of Offanger or Walmart area.
Right.
And there were some projections made in terms of census and enrollment, and how that would impact our space.
Actually, we tried, it's kind of a convoluted path, but I tried to get that data out of that new, that new area. Directly through the project manager of that area who expressed a willingness to go door to door. I didn't need names, I just needed to know how many of these facilities in your area, in fact, will have school-age children now, next year, the following year, etc. And he was going to do that it just didn't happen. So I shifted my attention to saying to the consultant, could your study include this? They said, well, sure, and I'm just kind of giving you a quick overview of how it can be done. So any new developments, housing patterns, they work with realtors. This group works with realtors to figure out what's a realtor market been like in the last 5 years, 10 years. What's the median sale of homes? How many people are moving in? How many people are moving out? All of those factors, kids, et cetera, that are school-age children, all of those factors are presented in the report of ideas. Now, I'm way past where they are right now. But eventually will lead to ideas of what you can do to keep the maximum use of your present facilities, if you can. I think the answer is yes, from what he's hearing. What I've been able to show him with our simple numbers. but may require rethinking how you use those buildings from what they're currently used, meaning the grade distributions, et cetera, uses of the classrooms, et cetera. So that's to come. It's a great question. All that is still coming, but it's not, because the only piece affecting the budget is a change in the West Jay-Z cost. And that's been factored in here, that's a change. It's keeping that figure the same.
It has been on the agenda of the operations committee on almost a regular basis. This third rate is talking about 4.2. And we also have had interest in the building for purchase.
Yeah, I remember that.
That we discussed. And so everything is still in evolution. Okay. I do have a couple of things that the board needs to think about. And probably it's good right now to get that discussion, and that is bringing more money from reserve this year and adding it to the budget. I think we should think about that. Maybe ask the superintendent, the business manager, to look at that and bring some recommendations forward. If there is, how much? Bring that forward in that situation. And also, we do have we have a public presentation. We have two of them scheduled. We don't have dates or anything. I need the board to think about, are we going to do both of them this year? Are we going to do one of them this year? I would like to get that information. We're kind of losing time. If you want to do both of them, if we can come up with dates that we can squeeze them in, or should we just stick to one?
We had so few people. One required a lot.
Last year, we called the presentations were one at Cumberland Head, one here at the main auditorium, here at the main complex.
The presentations I'm talking about are not the required.
It's not required. So it's you had the two and then that one, so you just want. I really have one in that one.
But we have a budget. If you'll recall, the budget calendar that the board has approved. The calendar has been approved. Still contains a placeholder for where the public where the presentation will be made.
We have one should be here.
Go back to one.
Yeah.
People
are
concerned unless
one.
I'm not advertising
correctly. Okay. We'll work on getting a couple of dates for our next board meeting. I think. Do we have enough time to join?
Could we have to pick a date before?
Quick straw poll, or you want to do it about bringing more information forward about that? Is that well board?
Yeah.
Is that okay for the board members to take a look at our fund balance and recommendations?
Yeah, we have new projections if they add so much.
I mean, we have a five-year plan in terms of what's going to happen after these next 2 years. After the deficit reduction, which we used to bring now.
So not on a budget basis.
We can talk about that.
But yeah, but I thought this is a good time to get them working on that, because we haven't kind of asked them to do that yet. And I thought it's something I think is worth it.
Okay.
Hey, I'll give it back to you.
Okay.
They were under room. You had to beat it.
You had to beat it. Drive them.
Don't trip. Don't blame me.
That would be a good thing.
Oh. Okay.
I had my annual report two-thirds done this afternoon for work, and I walked away to take a phone call, and guess what happened to it?
Didn't get done, huh?
Yeah, so I had to re...
Did it save?
Yes, I did. The computer crashed. So I had to rebuild all my tables and everything. Yeah, right?
You know what?
My blood pressure was about...
Better you than me, is all I can say.
I was like...
I do everything on paper. I don't care.
So, I'll use
all the trees I need to.
I hate that damn word for
it. That four-letter word for it.
Okay. I make a motion we proceed rapidly.
Trying. I will try.
The school is off the second week. The school is tired.
No, Ronnie can't talk.
Who?
Right.
Oh, Kathleen has to be excused.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Where am I?
We'll bring this
next
back in.
I just got done
the superintendent's report for us.
You just did it, I thought.
That was a budget. Very brief, but good stuff. Always good stuff. We have so much to celebrate with our kids. And here's some of our good news. The Middle School Math Counts Club, under the direction of Juliet Cleveland at the middle school, won the Math Counts competition. You probably read that in the Press Republican recently, held at Clinton Community College on February 28th. As a result, those scholars of ours are traveling on to RPI for state-level competition. That's going to occur Saturday, March 14th, and they will be competing for honors above the honors they've already earned as winners of the math competition. So congratulations to them and to their advisor, of course, Juliet Cleveland. On January 8th, another good news item, a number of our students associated with Freshman Academy and the Peer Connects program, a little bit you've heard about tonight, along with advisor Amy Campbell, spoke to Commissioner Mills and others at the Clinton, Essex, Warren, Washington School Boards Association dinner. At your seats, I put in front of you the collage of pictures that were created from the events that evening, and they are here. I'm sorry I don't have enough for everybody in the audience. This was the limited number they sent us. But there's some pretty neat, candid photos of student participation at the dinner. And, of course, the board members will remember, and I have their names up here, participating as students, Jessica McNeil, Tevin Connors, Nathan Bull, Hayden Head, Ray Relation, and James O'Connell. They represented our district in an extremely positive fashion. There were several board members present, and I believe from previous meetings, board members have spoken to the caliber of the presentations of our students. They truly were inspiring and very much to be proud of how they presented themselves at that dinner. But we got an extra bonus. We didn't know this was coming. Here we go. Got pictures to go with it. The only other item I have is related to the agenda. As Mr. Karofsky has already pointed out, the agenda was modified a little bit for a couple of changes. The one I want to point out had to do with the proposed appointment of the district treasurer. The interview process was completed, as I put in my update. The recommendation was made. The candidate accepted. I put all of that information in my update to you, and then on Monday morning, the candidate changed. The mind of the candidate was changed, and the individual is no longer wishing to be presented this evening for appointment. So where are we? What I will do is, with the committee's recommendations already of all of the candidates in tow, I would begin to go through those applicants as we interview them and proceed with the candidate we would like to bring forward to the board for an appointment in the very near future. And that's my update, my report, I should say.
That also was the reason we struck the signature checks item that we had with that. Now go to the business.
So our treasurer is gone now, right?
Friday. Effective Friday.
Are we going to have an appointment, a special meeting for an appointment?
Well, Ron's going to take care of the rest of it. He's going to cover us until
we get that appointment. My timeline is pretty active. to close that gap and find our candidate of choice. And I'll turn a little bit to Mr. King when I say that, having served on the interview team as the board representative, I think you could speak to our next move.
I would say that our second in line, I won't say our second choice, but our second in line is very highly qualified, and awesome. I would be very, very comfortable with her taking.
I just need to firm up the dialogue with the candidate and then determine if there's an acceptance of my offer, how quickly could they become appointed here at the board table. So that's the work I'll be doing the next couple of days. I'm sorry.
And that's okay. And I might as well ask it now. I was going to ask it down below. Does the board want to have a special meeting to put that in place if we have a second person?
Oh, you mean to appoint him?
Well, don't we have a meeting in 2 weeks anyway?
We have it, yeah.
Yeah,
we've
got
one
scheduled.
If we get somebody here sooner, if they can
start.
Well,
I'm sure we can get at least a quorum here. You know, I'll make it if we want one. I mean, everyone wouldn't have to make it, but if the quicker the better, I think, because we don't have a lot of time.
Yeah, it's going to come down to whoever is agrees to the offer.
Well, they also
are they available?
Yeah.
So I'm using 2 weeks out, kind of thinking minimally they might need
the next
a 2 week
anyways.
2 week notification. Whoever it might need at least 2 weeks. And that takes us right up to our next board meeting, so it may not.
Is there any problem with Ron taking over those duties?
Or well, he's going to.
No.
He's going to.
No.
Just wait till the next meeting.
Push
comes
to
shove,
answer?
He's going over the cliff.
He wasn't even asked.
I have no problem.
It's just a question. I thought if for some reason we had a chance to put her on earlier, if that's an option, the board, if I had enough board members, we could pull together.
If it was necessary, I would come.
Okay. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I'm sure we could slap together five if you need it.
Okay.
Yeah, I just have two quick items. Last board meeting, we discussed that at the March audit committee meeting, the audit committee was interested in having the internal auditor come and go over the internal audit risk assessment. Contacted him, and he's agreed to come and be there, so we're all set for that. And the other item is a good news item. We received notification from Standard and Poor's rating agency that the district has received, or that they have affirmed, the district's A rating for Standard and Poor's, so we have received an A rating. For those who are interested in what an A rating is, it is basically means that we have a strong capacity to meet financial commitments and that we are somewhat susceptible to economic conditions and changes in economic circumstances, which, as you saw from the budget proposals, the economic conditions do play a factor, but an A rating is a very good rating for us to have, and that's happy to be able to present that to the board.
Does it make money cheaper for us?
Yes.
Is that what we had last year, or is it a better rating?
I don't know what we had last year. I only knew I didn't have a rating for the. This is the first time I've received notifications since I've been here.
A plus plus would be
able
a better.
I was just able to see prior to the capital project, we had a better rating, and I think that was because of our debt service was lower.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions around? We'll move on to item 5 in the minutes. Resolved that the Board of Education does hereby approve the minutes of the meeting of the Board of Education, which is held on 2/24. Thank you, Richard.
Second.
Thank you, Guy. Questions, comments, changes, additions? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Under B, resolved that the Board of Education does hereby accept the minutes of the Audit Committee held on 1/27/2024.
Motion.
I'll second. Thank you, Richard. Can you see? Questions, comments, additions, deletions? All in favor?
Aye.
Abstain? Noes? Under item 6, next page, CSC recommendations. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education the approval of the CSC recommendations dated 3/10/09.
Motion.
Second.
Thank you, Leonard. Thank you, Guy. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Under personnel and appointments, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education the following substitute appointments beginning on the date indicated.
Move the list.
Motion.
A second. Go ahead. Yeah, you're moving the list.
Yes.
And Richard?
No, one second.
Second?
Yep.
Questions, comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Under B, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education to approve a letter of agreement between Don Ray as the transition counselor and the Beekman Town Central School District to provide educational services as an independent contractor under the supervision of the coordinator of incarcerated youth program at the Clinton County Jail at a rate of $25 per hour for a maximum of 10 hours weekly, effective March 11, 2009. And that's under the grant-funded piece.
Motion.
Richard?
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve. Questions, comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carried. Under C, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends the Board of Education to appoint Shauna Fassett Hilderman?
Heilman.
I knew I was going to miss that. As a district-wide coordinator for the coordination of the fitness center and indoor track is at a stipend of $10,000, which now is prorated, effective March 11, 2009 through June 30, 2009.
One second.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Richard. Questions, comments?
Yes.
Will she be responsible also for the afternoon, for the community-based time as well?
She
runs the whole program.
All the volunteers follow her. Yeah.
Okay. Time actually is time after.
She won't physically be there that whole time.
She just makes sure there's coverage.
The one that was,
yeah, she will with the volunteers.
Just wanted to make sure that it includes that as well.
Yeah, she has her actual hours, if you will, would be post her teaching hours, which is the afternoon program. It starts at the end of the day, mm-hmm. the school day, but she also would be coordinating all of the volunteers for the other portions of the days mm-hmm. when she wouldn't be there.
All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Resolved that the superintendent recommends the Board of Education to appoint the following fitness center community supervisor, as in Corey Tracy.
Motion.
Second.
Thank you, Leonard. Thank you, Richard.
Follow-up question. The previous one, that's why I asked.
Yes, you do.
This position will just be a yearly thing, right?
Volunteer.
It's volunteer. Just volunteer.
Volunteer. Certified to watch.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Yeah.
I go to the gym all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So she's just going to help with the situation. You do remember
doesn't show.
Corey was the one that held
yes,
the position.
She asked me about the year.
But she's going to be another volunteer?
Yeah.
Or a supervisory volunteer?
She's just a volunteer.
Just a volunteer.
Volunteer okay.
Not a supervising volunteer.
Well, they have people that are trained to volunteer as a supervisor,
yeah.
But it's not
supervising.
They're supervising a fitness center.
Okay,
but they're
so
doing
she'll be
free.
Another volunteer because presently there's 18 volunteers right now. Right. Mm-hmm. So she'll be another.
She's just
one.
An additional.
She'll just be
that's
additional.
A volunteer. That okay. Item D is another volunteer. That's literally what that proposal.
I hate to make a big issue.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Abstained? Noes? Motion carries. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends that the Board of Education approve the renewal for consultant services of Carol Deshays, speech-language pathologist for the supervision of the speech and hearing handicap teacher for the 2.5 hours per session with a maximum of 4 sessions total for the remainder 08-09 school year for medical eligible students at the rate of $80 an hour.
Motion.
Thank you, Richard.
One second.
Thank you, Steve. Questions, comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends that the Board of Education approve the employment contract between Donald Strong, Clerk of the Works, and the Beekman Town Central School District to oversee the capital facility plan project, which the voters approve on May 20th, 2008, and authorized by the board to sign said contract. Board President. On behalf of the district. Steve?
Second.
Okay, Leonard. Now I will point out that we addressed one change in there in your packet. I would like to get the board's okay on that, on how he does business. We listed it for you in the packet.
If in your, if I could help, if in, in your attachment that came with the packet, you'll see a Schedule A, which was a detailed description of job responsibilities. And I was referencing the only deviation, if this was in fact approved tonight, there would be one deviation of the job he task. The board needs to help me help him know, is this his task or not? As it's currently listed, item 3.11 in the schedule would allow, would disallow, if you will, the project, it's listed in the list of what the project representative shall not be able to do. And this is, again, drafted by architects as a standard agreement. But the board may want to weigh in on this one. The is not allowed to order the contractor to stop the work or any portion thereof. And I wanted the board members to know that the vigilance of a clerk of the works is often to come to and include doing that. If it's in the judgment of the clerk of the works that stopping the work, in fact, is saving the district money until the problem is resolved, leaving it in there as a restriction would mean he couldn't take that step. He's encouraging us to consider removing that restrictions so that the clerk has that ability in the judgment like of his capacity to stop the work.
Yeah. So it's the same thing as the change order authority.
I could use as an example, if concrete was being poured.
I know a change order costs money, this one might not.
If concrete was being poured incorrectly, let's just pick that as a simple example. This language would say the clerk of the works could observe it being done, but couldn't stop them from doing it because of this restriction. If you remove this restriction, you are saying we not only want you to be able to do it, we expect you to stop the work because jackhammering out a mistake later is more expensive. So that's why that piece is in it for discussion.
My question is, I'm not against it, but there might be a time when stopping them could cost us more money.
That's partly what the job description is about and the relationship of who he reports to, et cetera, et cetera. That's all part and parcel of the same package.
That's why you choose a clerk that's who works that knows what he's doing.
So I wanted, before you took action on the proposal, I wanted to simply get reaction to, does it
stay? So you're talking about 3.11.
3.11, yes. Exactly. Should it stay in?
Are we going to allow him to stop work? Are we going to give him the authority or not?
I would say he should come out. I think he ought to have the authority to be able to stop it.
Yeah, why have him if you don't?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but that could be one as well.
Yeah. So does anybody have a problem with pulling that out of it?
If we're gonna have him do it, and you don't have the confidence to give him the power, then you shouldn't have him do it.
Right. Okay.
So,
Frank.
We just have to trust him, I assume. I mean, if it's a, hopefully he won't have to stop work. And hopefully it won't.
Without some input.
Hopefully it will not be a reoccurring incident. I mean, if it's reoccurring, maybe we'll have to take a second look at it.
But I'm sure they're going to see that that's in the contract. So I guess that would change their attitude anyway.
I guess my opinion is the man's been here for 30 years. He's overseen tremendous changes in his building. I would trust his judgment to say stop.
Not 30 years, 15 years.
Yeah. 15, well, I don't know.
It felt like 30.
I've known him a long time.
And no, also, I would say, I would project for you also that there are very few instantaneous decisions like that would come up in the
I would assume he would run across your desk before that's he my did point. It anyway.
Yeah. It won't be alone on do I or don't I. It's just that he'll be, it may be a telephone call asking for permission to go do it.
You're going to stop right here, I'm going to be right back. I mean, that more or less tells me.
He has a cell phone.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem.
Okay.
Do you want to qualify that?
The motion?
Responsibility by indicating that you can do so after consultation with the superintendent?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Do you want
I think. Chances are he's going to probably be able
I'm going to want to know
it.
Anyway, I would tell you.
Do you want
I will
you
want
that
to know
there?
Anyway.
Well, if you want it, then put it in. But, if you want it,
I would want to know.
If you're out of the area or not available at the time, and he makes a phone
call, then he has the choice.
Then he'll have the authority to do it.
Yeah, if we word it that way, then.
Okay.
But the superintendent's always available.
Yeah, 24/7.
Supposed to be.
Right at the end of that cell phone.
Except when his battery runs out.
We even chase him out west when he goes.
Well, yeah, so do we need to make a motion?
That's
right.
Got a cell phone.
Got a cell phone.
do we need to make a motion?
What, if anything, to the resolution needs to be done then, Joe?
The motion that we have is including the change.
Okay.
Oh.
Well, the thing is that he can do it with, while you're here, he can do it with your recommendation. If not, he has the authority, I would think. Unless you don't want him to have the authority if you're not here.
He's going to go to him anyway.
He's going to call anyway. Yeah, he's going to call.
He's going to call.
He will.
All right. Sorry.
He will. I'll tell him he will.
Yeah. Okay. Joe, you had a last minute? No. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, someone can vote.
So the motion is to leave, to strike that out?
The motion.
It's already been out.
It's not in there for the contract.
We had to approve it.
It was already taken out of the contract, Joanne.
The contract we're proposing does not have that in the do nots.
So it's already been
the contract that sent us
it.
In our package,
we're just approving,
Joanne,
it. Just approving the change.
The contract we're approving didn't have it.
Correct.
Right, so we're going to strike it out.
We're going to strike it out.
Yeah, right, yeah. Strike it out. Okay.
Right.
The contract we're approving, we'd already taken it out.
So if it doesn't say that he's got the authority, then he doesn't
have it. No, he does.
So they rewrote it already.
They just deleted 311 in the contract that we're approving. 311 states, order the contract to stop work for any portion thereof. That was a limitation.
Well, yeah, it's the thing he can't do, so you're basically deleting it.
Or deleting it. So he hasn't got that limitation anymore.
So you just take it out of there. And
right.
Are you suggesting we should actually list it? Okay, that's what I thought you were kind of referring to.
We're deleting it out of the do not.
So listing it would be an additional duty and responsibility.
Yes. So we would need
to. So we just need to add another duty.
Yeah. We'd move 311 into the duties.
Yeah, that language could become the duty.
Okay, I need to get the.
I'll make a motion to.
That makes sense.
That'll change.
Okay, so now we're set with that. Any other additional comment or questions? Does everybody understand what we actually did?
No, but we never do.
Don't say that.
No, we're okay. Yeah.
You took it out of the do-nots and you put it in the do's.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's can correct. Do it.
And he has the authority.
Yes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. This is the next one that was added. It's good to get this in. We're coming fast on the spring season. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends to the Board of Education the following spring athletic positions for the 2008-09 school year effective 3/17 as indicated.
We'll move the list.
Second.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Guy. Questions? Comments? I do want to point out we do still have a vacancy. It's on the softball. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Motion carries. Under policies, resolved that the Board of Education does hereby approve the following policies.
Move the list.
Yeah, and then we can discuss.
I'll second.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Steve. Okay. These are all just revisions. They're in your packet. They're all...
I have one question.
Yes.
Under 0100 equal opportunity, can you tell me what this predisposing genetic characteristic that is actually
in English?
That one's coming directly from school boards.
Okay. What's it say?
It's basically saying that you have to offer equal opportunity across the board. You know, when you have hirings.
I would interpret the predisposing genetic characteristics would be physical deformities that are genetically based.
Oh, okay.
That if you know a family history involves them, you're treating everyone equally.
It's just another group under the list.
But they had so many other ones.
Yeah.
When you got to that, I said, haven't they already said that?
Not really.
I have a question.
Yes.
Which one is it? Instructional goals. I see that the whole policy has been changed, but objective 7, all students will be afforded the opportunity to graduate with a regular high school diploma.
Instructional goals.
Instructional goals. 4,000.
There's 5 times the kinds of diplomas.
There's 5 kinds of diplomas?
Yeah. Regulars are the lowest. You got regents with honors, and you,
okay. That was my question. I was wondering, regents diplomas are not still. I thought in the long run that was the only one to be available.
No.
There's still regular high school diplomas available.
Yes.
That's a minimum worth trying to achieve.
Are we at a discussion stage?
Yes, we are.
I would want to point out this one in particular because it generated some questions at the last board meeting. I'm looking at policy 2120.1, which deals with candidates and campaigning. You might recall there was a follow-up conversation on that subject.
That's the one that George wanted to
exactly. And we'll pass that on through the minutes. But the ruling, and I'm going to have Joe just nod in assent or correct me if I trip up on here, but the language affecting the board's ability to change that amount to any amount or a lesser amount is not made available to boards of education to make that choice. The
state law
takes command over local preference in this regard, put it very simply. So the amount of money that would, the discussion centered on any amount must be reported. It can't change the language that you're seeing here. It's the state law that sets that limit. So I just wanted to point it out before you voted on it.
I just have one question. Because of this new requirement, is the paperwork referring to this going to be included in the packet when someone applies to be a board member? Because if you have to fill out, it will be. Okay, so on the
you
mean,
Will it be available on the internet?
Yes.
Okay. Just what I'm saying, so they can't say, I didn't get it. I didn't know.
Good point. Yep, that's clerk will handle that.
Can I have one mark?
I have my wife's glasses. I can't read.
I know it probably went into.
What? One of the policies marked up, the one I just looked at, I think.
Yeah.
Where did we just put it? That one.
This one?
That one?
Is that the one?
Good?
Yep.
Okay.
I lost my number. Okay. Any other questions or comments? I will be bringing the next meeting, which will take a little longer, but I have another pile of goals to bring forward. And that's one of the things I've been trying to keep up with is to push the goals. But these are not revised. These are
kind of new ones
that are coming up from, again, school boards on our review. That's what we're paying them for. So on the notice that you're getting some not revised goals
policies. Yeah.
These are new policies.
Okay.
So you want to take a good look at them.
These are new policies.
Not goals.
Coming.
Yeah. Your next meeting. I didn't want to mix
when you
the
said
two.
Goals, I was like, are we going to revisit the goals that we started?
Yeah. Policies. It's policies.
Policies, yep. Okay.
Which is our goal.
Are we lucky if we go through them all in 10 years?
Is that a motion carried?
I'm about to.
She's trying to move you along.
Yes. Well, we're in policy, so I just want to remind the board that. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? No's? Motion carries? Thank you, Joanne. Resolved that the Board of Education accept the following reports as presented by the Audit Committee. They do such a fine job.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Steve in a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Opposed? Motion carries. Under B, the transfer resolved that Superintendent of Schools recommends the Board of Education to approve the following transfer that is over $5,000.
Motion.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Steve. And I will also remind you that we moved one here because we're still having a problem with assessing the computer system. So we'll wait for additional information to come back. And this is a roll call.
Shu Levine?
Yes.
Guy Falcon?
Yes.
Brian Kane?
Yes.
Leonard King?
Yes.
Steve Trombley?
Yes.
Stan Crosby?
Yes. Motion carries. Under C, resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends that the Board of Education approve the payment for health services fees. This is tied to Peru Central School District for 08-09 school year in the amount of $26,178.14 for 46 students at $569.09 per pupil.
So moved.
Second. Leonard?
I'll second. Ruth? Second.
Frank? Thank you, Frank. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? Those? Motion carries. Resolved that the superintendent of schools recommends that the board to approve the stipulation of settlement and order between the Clinton County IDA through the North Country Gas Pipeline Company as leasee and the Beekman Town Central School District. Now, is this in conjunction with the
pilot?
Our, my next one.
North Country Pipeline is a subsidiary of Saranac Power Company. This particular stipulation is in reference to the tax certiorari proceeding.
Yes.
Has been brought.
And as
you're considering it an IDA pilot amendment to the IDA pilot agreement.
And the next one I'm doing is
the amendment. To
is the amendment to the pilot.
To bring
so I need to do one before I do the other.
You bring us some
money. They're not related.
They're not related. That's basically what I'm asking. I didn't think so, but I thought just in case. So under D, resolved that the superintendent of schools do recommend this.
Motion.
All right.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Frank. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstains? No's? And under item E that I added.
I don't see.
There's no item E.
I don't have an item.
That's the item I told you in the beginning we need to add to this for our.
But did you hand it out?
No.
Joanne's going to.
We don't have a resolution yet to read.
The attorney just
did before the meeting. Item E here and I don't see it.
No, got it. No. I don't either.
Oh, that was the one I said in the beginning I need to add there.
Oh, okay.
For this industrial agency.
And here comes the language.
Authorizing the superintendent upon recommendation of the school attorney to sign an amendment to the first amendment to payment in lieu of tax agreement concerning Saranac Power Partner, LLP, previously approved by the Board of Education.
That's why we needed to make sure we got it right.
To discuss.
I'll move it.
Thank you, Frank.
I'll second it.
Thank you, Steve. Does anybody want to read the document?
No.
15, 20 pages.
This is just what we're going to get our $240,000, right?
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
We never turned down money.
No's. Abstains. Motion carries. Additional items. I have nothing to bring forward. Does anybody else have anything?
As part of the operations committee,
okay.
I would like to have a recommendation to the board that we put on the ballot not to exceed $240,000 for bleachers, budget item for bleachers for our school.
For the
to request to use $240,000 out of the reserve fund.
As a proposition or as a part of the budget?
As a proposition. Okay.
As a proposition that will be voted on by the public.
Okay.
Does that include the reconstruction of the field?
Or no.
Is
that
just bleachers? This is for the bleachers.
Just the bleachers. So the field's not being done this year?
That will be, if there's excess monies and stuff, and it would be okay. Determined. It's nothing that can. We did take the bleachers away. They don't have us in here to use, so we're recommending that they give the bleachers to.
And the second part of that is there's no offense fixing the field if you don't get the bleachers, because then you can't play here. You know, so.
You can still play on the field.
Well, the gym classes can, but the other teams aren't going to.
Yeah,
well,
he just ran it.
So. That's the recommendation. Is the board okay with formalizing that as a proposition? Because we need to know that for advertising
It's good to give the public a vote on it.
Yes, be there.
It's a public vote.
It will be a public
vote. It
costs
the public no dollars.
Totally takes it out of our hands.
We have the money, but we're going to have to spend it.
We're looking for permission to spend money.
To spend it on bleachers.
Yes.
We don't have to make a motion for that. We just have to agree on the proposition.
That's agree to put it on the
agenda. I agree
to put it on the agenda. It needs to go through tonight because we've got to get it in the paper.
Joe, what do they need to do to put that to the legal notice?
Do we have to make a motion on it?
Yes, you should.
I'll make a motion that we put it on the ballot using our reserve funds to purchase the bleachers for the football field.
Was there an amount cap on that?
Not to exceed 240,000.
Okay. I need a second.
And I'll second.
Here we go.
Okay. I'm sorry. I missed.
Joe, is that all we need to write the proposition? Do you need anything else to write that?
For the vote, probably not. But now, the language.
We're going to vote on the whole package as a board before it goes out to the voters. So
all the propositions.
All the propositions. So this will just give us the legal chance.
You can fine-tune the wording.
Right, we can fine-tune the language and stuff. This will get a motion added to the budget.
Transparency.
Yeah.
So nice.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Abstains? Noes? Addition.
Discussion. Should that have been a roll call vote if there was more than...
We will when we come back to the full budget.
Okay.
Because we'll have a roll call vote. The full budget will incorporate all the materials.
All the propositions.
Right now, we're just working on budget.
So
that'll come.
I just like to show my ignorance once in a while.
Well, that's how you learn.
Motion carries.
You don't learn.
I'll open the floor one more time for quick comments.
Well,
yes. This is a comment time. If you'd put that in a comment, that'd be okay.
Okay. A comment on the policy changes. Where will those be accessible?
They're online.
So they are online?
Yes. Okay. And as soon as they are adopted by the board, they immediately go online.
Okay. Thank you.
Within a week.
Give us a little time.
How do you say immediately?
Okay.
We don't
have not tomorrow.
You don't?
The clerk to do her job needs a question.
Oh, okay.
They can be accessed through school board.
Yeah.
They're through our site.
There'll be a little time lag, but they'll be there.
Yes.
In the packet was the write-up for the paper. It was only a draft.
Right.
And I want to discuss the hours have always been from 12 to 9.
Yes.
And I want to know, can we change it from 11 to 8?
For the actual vote night.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The voting usually takes place from noon to 9 at night.
Not many people come in after.
Is there a law that requires us to stay open at 9?
It's supposed to stay.
It'd be the same amount of hours from 11 to 8 instead of 12 to 9.
So we have to check the board.
It has to be by board resolution. Yeah.
The question is, does the law dictate that it...
Just hours that are dictated, not...
I think so, but I want to check.
Yeah. I think Board of Elections has to know that. If we can change it, I have no problem with it.
Let's leave it at that. If the change can be made, does anybody have any problem with the change?
No.
Okay. So
you let some people come to lunch to do it.
And the reason for the change.
You need that in a resolution.
Just want to make sure. Because
when I ran the elections last year,
okay,
I had people come before noon to vote, and I told them they couldn't vote because we don't open till noon, so they couldn't come back. And from... After 8 o'clock, there is not very many people that come to go.
Okay, so the traffic flow is great.
So you're basically trying to cover the
lunch hour.
Lunch hour.
Yeah.
Do you need an actual resolution, then?
Yeah, but I'll bring it
at
the next board meeting as long as...
Do we have time?
Because it'll go in the paper. Send it the next day.
And we'll have... Okay. With everything
and
else.
We'll bring the other resolution, too.
Yes.
I think so.
It's...
We don't want to get in trouble.
The proposition.
Yeah.
Proposition.
Yeah. All of them, actually.
We'll revise the sheet with everything. We'll revise the notice to the paper, and everybody can see it.
And we'll have that again at our next board meeting.
Right. And, but that has to be board resolution to change the hours, though. But
okay.
We'll do it at the next meeting as long as you're okay.
If you have time to publish it.
Okay. So I'm left with Frank's duty.
Oh, I'll make a motion, we adjourn.
Yes.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Great.
You okay with the language?